Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, January 7th, 2014. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Now, today on The Dad Show, our first show of the new year, we're going to be talking with James Cameron about a trip that, was originally intended to just be a wine-and-dine race weekend, in-and-out quick trip, but through the sort of happy happenstances of the calendar, had a couple of bonuses thrown in as well. So, welcome back to the show, James.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
So this was an adults-only trip, yeah?
No, we brought the kids.
Oh, you brought the kids, too, even for a quick trip. Okay. So whole family, and the original plan for Wine and Dine weekend, what was the time frame, and, you know, how long were you planning on staying overall?
It was just going to be a couple days, basically just a weekend. Given my wife's schedule, it's tough to get days off. This is also going to be our fourth trip in this year, which is odd. Like, we had done two trips in one year, like, once.
Right.
Normally, we're just, like, one vacation a year kind of family. But just through, you know, circumstances, we were able to get it in, you know, four trips this past year. So this was unusual. On the one hand, that meant that we were a little more laid back with this trip. Haven't been the fourth trip. We're like, okay, we don't have to see and do everything. But then,
sure.
On the other hand, it was also, we found out, you know, like, they're going to be the first Christmas party. We've never done that. You know, food and wine we had never been to. So we had to make sure. So it actually got kind of hectic pretty quick. We opted to bring the kids with us because we had nobody to dump them with at home.
Okay.
So we actually, it kind of got complicated because, you know, the whole thing hinged on having somebody, because both my wife and I were going to run the Wine and Dine.
Right. I remember this now, and you were looking for somebody at the last minute who could watch the kids, because your original plan kind of evaporated on you.
Yeah, that, you know, like with only a couple weeks left before the race, the original plan, which was we had somebody that we invited to come down with us, that kind of blew up on us, and so we were scrambling. And but it just so happened that a friend of my wife who was coming down that same weekend was scheduled to check in on Sunday. She rearranged her schedule and was able to come down on Saturday.
Oh, nice. So you actually had somebody on short notice who could, you know, check in early to help you out so that you guys could run.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge help.
All right.
And made everything possible.
So when did you actually arrive at Walt Disney World? Did you come in on Friday? Or I assume you had to come in at least Friday because you were running early Saturday.
Well, the race is actually at night. Well, the kids' race
is... Oh, that's right. It's Wine and Dine. So you have an evening race.
Okay. We came in late Thursday night.
Okay. And so since you were running on Saturday, what did you do with your day on Friday?
So Friday gave us our opportunity to do food and wine at Epcot for the earlier portion of the day and Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party on Friday evening.
Wow, so that's a stacked day for the day before. Well, I guess it's, with a late race, maybe you have a little more flexibility, but still a pretty stacked day. So Friday at Food and Wine Festival. Why don't you go through maybe just a few of the things about Food and Wine Festival, especially since you hadn't been before, that really kind of stood out for you?
We had been to Flower and Garden recently, where they had, you know, they've been adding food options and little
sure,
kiosks.
Sure.
So we thought that, you know, would prepare us for food and wine, which it was not the case. It was, a madhouse. I mean, maybe being the last weekend and a race weekend at that, maybe it was, more crowded than on another weekend. I don't know.
And it was a Friday.
We got there. We did a few things in Future World with the kids, to get that out of the way, and then we headed back to World Showcase. And as soon as we hit World Showcase, we were amazed. It was the kiosks that they have at Flower and Garden are nothing compared to how many kiosks they have at Food and Wine.
Yeah, it's like three or four times as many.
And so we were a little overwhelmed, but we picked a direction, and we're just like, you know what? We're gonna go this way. So we started off, we went to the right counterclockwise around World Showcase and, just started hitting whatever looked good. And the plan was that we would eat so much going around World Showcase that we probably wouldn't have dinner.
Sure.
And we would just go to the party and we would snack the rest of the night.
Right, right.
So we hit a few of the places right off the bat. We saw the new the Puerto Rican pavilion. We didn't stop there, but there was the Greek pavilion that we stopped at, which had a few things we had to try. We had to get some cheese soup at Canada. We had sure. to partake of some. My wife at least had to partake of some libations. As we went around, there was another dad there, and he was a couple countries behind us, and we just couldn't meet up.
Oh no, you kept missing on your way around World Showcase.
We kept posting Facebook updates, and and it turned out he was a couple countries behind us, and just because we were on tight schedule, we wanted to get through everything.
Sure.
At least make it all the way around, and we knew we had to head out, go back, and change, and head to the party. So we're in a little bit of a crunch for time, but I think aside from being crowded and one almost disappointing thing where another friend came to rescue was that we couldn't find any of the checklists.
For oh, right. Like, the little booklets.
The little booklets, the passports.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we went to the festival center in Future World at the old Horizons, not old Horizons, old Wonders of Life Pavilion.
Right.
And we went there. We tried to find one there, and they didn't have any. And they said, "Well, check the little shops and the kiosks at a World Showcase." And when we got there, they were like, "No, we don't have any here. Why don't you go check the festival center?"
It's that whole last weekend thing, They get to that point, and they're certainly not printing anymore. So
yeah, so they were like, and it was kind of a disappointment because we really wanted to get this. My wife really wanted to get the stamps as we walked around, which is something we enjoyed doing at Flower and Garden. And a cast member finally said, "You know what? We just don't have any. You're not going to find any anywhere." And then in a weird circumstance, that the friend that was coming in the next day was traveling with a friend who was there that day, who we kind of sort of know. And so he actually saw us, and we recognized him. We were like, "Oh, hey!" And we just kind of in passing, we mentioned how we didn't have any of the passports, and he's like, "Oh," he's like, "I have one, but I've already it's already got stamps in it." And a few minutes later, after we said goodbye to him, he sends me a message saying that he found passports. And they were all the way over at the Odyssey restaurant.
Oh, so right where there. You were near the festival center.
So back, in which we were, when we ran into them, we had just entered World Showcase, so we weren't that far.
Right, right.
From where he found them. But by the time he texted me, I think I was in, we were close to Japan.
Oh, my.
So it was just a confusion, where he's, he was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm headed your way." So I turned, the wife took the kids, and they went on to the next, country, and I started walking back, and then I'm like, "Wait a second." I'm like, "Which way are you walking around?"
Oh, no. Showcase?
He's like, "Oh, I'm going to take the boat." And I'm like, "Well, which boat? Because I have to know whether I'd meet you in Morocco or over by Germany." And so it turns out, I met up with him in the American Adventure, outside there.
Right,
and
right. At least you eventually got headed the right direction.
Yeah, and then at that point, I lost my family and had to find them. Eventually, I found them in Italy. And, but it was a good time. I wish we would have had more time. It was,
sure.
There was so much food. We sampled what we could. One of the standouts for me was...
It had all the makings. You know, if you were actually in Europe instead of in World Showcase, it sounds like it had all the makings of a Chevy Chase movie.
Yeah, I just needed somebody to steal my camera and run off with it.
There you go. So how are the kids holding up as you dash around a crowded World Showcase? That's what I want to know.
They were doing pretty well. We satisfied them a bit with the stop off at the Seas with Nemo and friends and let them run around and they got a little enjoyment. You know, that's probably their favorite pavilion in Future World.
Okay.
And you know, they were a little upset when we cut that short because you know we had to get a move on. But they were doing pretty well. Our 7-year-old, soon to be 8-year-old, was very adventurous and trying some of the food that we got.
Oh, very cool.
Our 3-year-old not so much, but that's understandable.
Right,
but
sure.
He did try a few things, and he was starting to not feel so hot. I think at this point, I think we first started to notice he was coming down with something. We weren't sure at the time what it was.
Right.
So he just relaxed and in the rented stroller, which because we in our haste to get out the door, we left our umbrella stroller at home and
oops.
Didn't make it very far into the park before it was just like no we're not, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
With a 3-year-old and no stroller, so
no not happening.
So he did a lot of just relaxing and. But they held up pretty well, and they were very excited about the fact that they knew we were going to the party
okay.
in the evening.
Right, right. So, at what point did you decide that you it was time to kind of head on across? Did you go straight from Epcot to the party? Did you stop at the resort in between?
We went back to our resort. We were staying at Art of Animation. We were relying on bus transportation. I think we left Epcot. Probably around 2:30.
Wow! So you really did get a lot in a fairly short time frame because World Showcase didn't even open till 11, and you were out by 2:30, but you made it all the way around.
Yeah, we made it a little. We didn't stop. We didn't stop in Mexico, or there was like one. There was like a dessert cart that we missed that we were looking for. And I think it was back towards like the World Showcase Plaza,
right
in that area, and we must have just missed it because we came in. On that garden path,
sure.
So we kind of came in on more towards the right side. So we missed that, but we knew, we ran out of time. So we hooked it, got the bus, went back to the hotel. First time staying at Art of Animation, we had visited there a couple times, and we thought the room was really great. We had a Cars suite, and everybody in the family really liked the suite. We got back there because we wanted to change. We had bought, matching sweatshirts.
Okay.
And some things, to wear
right.
to the party to be festive. So we went back and got our stuff together, and then we went back to the bus. And I think we got over to, it was like about 4:30.
All right. So you really did make good time back to the resort and get yourself turned around and really ready to take full advantage of the party if you were there by 4:30 because, you would have been in, and the party ticket starts at 4 o'clock at the earliest anyway.
Yeah, so that was the plan. The plan was, to take full advantage, to eat all day at Food and Wine, and so we wouldn't be hungry. We wouldn't have to eat dinner. We would just be able to snack and get the most enjoyment out of our first party. We've never done, the Halloween party either, so this was our very first party experience.
Okay.
And
so talk a little bit about the Very Merry Christmas Party. Were there things in particular that were kind of must-do for you when you got there that, you were planning around, or was it really just, go there and absorb everything you can?
Well, my wife and I discussed this at length, and we knew that the parties are all about the special shows and the special parade, special fireworks, and all the special meet and greets that you can do. So we were pretty much in sync with that. And we started off very well. We got in and, we weren't there exactly at 4 like we had hoped to be. But we went straight over to the firehouse and got our Sources of the Magic Kingdom special Elsa cards.
Okay.
Which was great. And we split up. While I was doing that with the kids, my wife ran over to the Emporium and grabbed a couple of souvenirs that she really wanted to get. And then you know, we regrouped and started heading up Main Street, you know, to head to the castle because they were going to do the castle lighting at 6. And that's when everything started falling apart.
Oops.
It just, the castle lighting did not go as planned. We didn't anticipate that the crowd would be that heavy.
Yeah, and see, that's the castle lighting that they do before the regular party
closes. Before the party starts.
So you get it's like a vice effect almost, because you've got the folks who have to leave at 7 anyway, who want to see that before they go, and then you've got the folks that are arriving for the party, and it just seems to me like it's you know, the recipe for disaster. It's like two weather fronts that meet at the front of the castle.
Yeah, we saw that big, you know, there was the actual regular castle show, Mickey's Dream Come True. I can't remember the name of it.
Right.
Ahead. But the castle show was going on. It was ending. And it was ending maybe 15 to 20 minutes before the castle lighting was supposed to begin.
Right.
So we saw the crowd of people there, and my hope was, I was like, well, maybe some of these people will, when that ends, maybe they don't realize that there's going to be the castle lighting. Maybe they're going to leave. So we kind of like, we went up, we were on the right side of the hub. You know, if it was a clock, we were at 3 o'clock, and we found a spot. They had the whole front horseshoe shaped area of the center portion of the hub roped off for wheelchair and special needs people to, you know, have a place
right
to view from. And there was also a large, like the very center was all roped off for media because it, I guess being the first party and the very first Frozen edition of this castle lighting, there were
had
a lot of media there, a lot of photographers and people doing video. So they were there as well. And the people started to filter out. Surprisingly enough, the plan seemed to work. People filtered out after the show was over, and we were able to get up right to the rope where the handicapped seating area was.
Okay.
And so there was nobody in front of us, and we had a decent view. There was one guy who was really tall, and depending on where he stood, if he stood right in front of you, you were screwed. But
okay.
If he was he kept moving around, and so when he was to the side, we had a decent view. My daughter could see, my son could actually see the castle. You couldn't see the stage because he was still in the stroller, and everything was fine. And then it was literally 2 or 3 minutes before the actual show began, the cast members came over and they're like, oh, we're going to open up the handicapped area for more people because there's not a lot of people in it. And they're like, you know, so they told us, they warned us that they were going to take the rope away
right.
and to be prepared. But the only problem was they didn't actually take that rope away that we were standing in front of.
They just took the rope that's at the entrance of.
They took the rope from the side off to our right away. And so basically everybody that was to our right moved in front of us.
Oh, lovely.
And just, so it was frustrating for everybody that was standing in the same area with us, because we had been standing there, we had a decent view, and then suddenly it was gone. And then once the kids started going up on the shoulders, then it was pretty much pointless.
Right.
We stayed. There was nowhere to go. I picked my daughter up. My son couldn't see anything. My wife said she couldn't see much. So my daughter at least got to see a little bit of it. She said she was okay as long as I held her as high as I could.
Right.
And, I didn't get to see any of the stage portion, but the castle lighting is something, that if you've never seen it before, we've been to the, at holiday time once before, but the castle was already lit when we walked in.
Yeah.
But to see the actual...
the ceremony is a pretty impressive thing.
The ceremony when they actually do it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then it was just, and then after that, it was just the crowd, trying to get where you wanted to go next, we were kind of stuck in the middle. So it was a little frustrating and got everybody a little on edge getting out of there. And the first thing that comes to mind, we say, well, what do we want to do next is everybody wants to get something to eat.
Of course.
So this is where, and so we went, I was like, all right, because the closest place I can think of is, Cosmic Rays. We just we head straight over there, and then we get there, and it's just the way things went. Not putting any blame on it, but my wife was very upset that they no longer had turkey burgers on the menu.
Okay.
Which is what she was, you know, apparently in the mood for. All set to get, like when we said that's where we're going. So not having anything that was to her liking, we decided to pull up stakes and go find something else. Next thing you know, that's a difficult thing to do
on a party night in that part of the Magic Kingdom.
Next thing you know, we walked around the entire park.
Yeah.
We pretty much went. We went back. We thought maybe the noodle station was serving something, but no, that was only cookies and hot chocolate.
Right.
Then Casey's, the line was too long, and nobody really wanted hot dogs anyway, except for me. then when next thing we were at Adventureland, we were by like you know, we're cutting through, and then somebody we finally decided on Pinocchio's Village House would have something for everybody.
Right.
That would their people were actually in the mood for. So we went all the way through Adventureland, Frontierland, Liberty Square. We saw this huge line outside the Columbia Harbor House, which was another option. But once we saw the line, and then we found out later that there was some kind of special meet and greet in there where, like, Olaf was in there.
Oh, wow.
But it was, like, media only anyway.
Yeah, well, because I was going to say, normally on party nights, at least during the Halloween party, I haven't been for the Christmas party, but for the Halloween party, that was always, you know, one of my annoyances is that Columbia Harbor House isn't open, they close Sleepy Hollow, and, you know, all of those smaller venues close, and just about the only things that stay open are Cosmic Rays and Pecos Bills, you know, the great big huge ones, and Casey's.
Yeah, so we were finding this out the hard way because we didn't have a plan for dinner because we weren't expecting
we were planning
to want
on having dinner. Yeah.
So we get all the way around to Pinocchio's and we see and there's a cast member standing outside the door. We see people inside eating. We're like, all right, let's go in. And she's like, oh yeah, we're open, but you can't go in this way. You have to go around the other side. So we go around the other side, only find out that they've already shut down the line for regular food. In anticipation of transitioning to just serving chocolate and snacks. And so we end up, you know, we're standing in Fantasyland, so we end up at, you know, there's the little stand, which I'm forgetting the name of. It was, you know, like, you know, over where Lumiere's Kitchen, Mrs. Potts' Cupboard, like one of those spots there serves macaroni and cheese. And so we just went over there and got online and said, this is what we're having. But we wasted close to an hour doing that walk around the park and trying to find something to eat. So, and at least we got a little bit smart here. Is, you know, my wife and daughter stayed online to get the food, and I took my son and went over and got online for the princesses, which were right across the walkway. The princesses with their princes were having a meet and greet, so I got online for that. And by the time they got the food and came to me, I'd made it almost to the front. And then I got out of line with my son because he had no interest. And, yeah, so they got to do a meet and greet there. And we walked back around to over by the Seven Dwarfs and decided to get online for that. And then made another mistake because we waited online for I don't know how many minutes, you know, a good 20 minutes. And then everybody decided that they didn't want to wait on the line that long. So it's just more wasted time.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really frustrating way to spend, you know, what really amounted to the first, you know, 2 hours of your party time.
Yeah, it was just, you know, everything, the whole plan, that loose plan that we had of, like, we were just going to concentrate on doing shows and character meet and greets kind of just went out the window.
Right.
The kids were having none of it. The lines for the characters were just too long. As excited as they might have been to meet all the dwarves, they just weren't having an hour long wait for that. And they started asking about rides, which kind of wasn't in our to my wife and myself, like, that wasn't really in the plan. Maybe there'll be a couple rides that we can get on, but it really, that wasn't a priority. But the kids, you know, were sick. Hey, we're in the Magic Kingdom. Let's go on some rides.
Right. That's what they were ready to do.
So we compromised by getting out of line, and we headed back to, through Liberty Square into Frontierland to go to the holiday Hootenanny, hoping to see Woody.
Right.
And some of the Toy Story gang. We were a little disappointed when we walked in to find that part of the road they had rotated out, and now we just had the Country Bears.
Oh, that's kind of disappointing.
But my daughter had a great time dancing with some of the bears. My son was terrified.
Okay.
So he would not let me put him down. So he was clinging to me, the whole time. But my wife and my daughter got to dance a little bit. So we spent some time in there. And before they could, the Toy Story characters could rotate back, we weren't sure how long it was going to take. We decided to move on and get out to give my son a break from being terrified. Ended up getting some snacks and catching the tail end of the parade as it went by. The first parade, so to do two a night, and we said we were going to not worry about the first one. And we had decided that maybe the Jingle Cruise would be next after that, only to see that there was a line for Genie and Jasmine, so we got on the line for that, and it was moving pretty well, and they swapped out for Aladdin and Abu right before we got there.
Okay.
So we missed Genie, but seeing Abu was cool.
Okay. Well, that's nice. Abu is really much more rare than Genie, so...
He is. So that was, the kids were excited about Genie, but Abu was pretty cool. And so getting to see them. On that line, we also saw Kenny the Pirate.
Oh, okay.
Who some of our listeners might know.
Right.
It was funny because we saw him, and, my wife's like, I think that's Kenny the Pirate. And I'm like, do you think so? He's like, well, he's wearing a shirt that says Kenny the Pirate on it. So
he's wearing a name tag.
And so we just happened to say, we're like, hey, Kenny. And he looked at us, and he's like, oh, hi. And, he gave us, he gave us a little, some of his little tips. He's like, he's like, wait till later and the lines go down. And we're like, yeah, great. That's pretty much our plan at this point. We'll do what we can and we'll try to hit some of the more characters, some of the characters, that have shorter waits later on as the party is ending. And it was funny to notice that when it was his turn to walk up and say hello to Jasmine and Genie, Jasmine actually, greeted him by name.
Of course.
I wish I could get that kind of treatment. But
so wait, I've been asked recently, I've been reminded by a listener that sometimes when we make these references, not everybody gets them. So just so everybody's clear, Kenny the Pirate is a member of the Disney fan community who has a couple of things that sort of have made his name in the fan community. The kind of current thing is that he runs his own blog that really focuses on character meet and greets, especially at Walt Disney World. And it's a great resource for, where you can find particular characters, how to meet, especially the rarer characters. He's got really good tips and suggestions for that. The other thing that you may have heard his name referenced with is that he was one of the first people to attempt and complete the touringplans.com ultimate touring plan, which involves hitting every attraction at Magic Kingdom, like every single attraction in a single day.
Yeah.
Which is a real challenge.
Yeah, it's very, very impressive.
So, all right, so you ran into Kenny in Adventureland at the meet and greet there with Aladdin and Jasmine and Abu. Any other things about the Christmas party stand out? Did you, feel like you eventually kind of recovered from the, difficult start and still managed to enjoy the party?
Yeah, I think that was the point where, things started to, we started getting to a more of a flow. We weren't arguing as much about like what to do next. We kind of regrouped and got it back together. We did have to skip the Jungle Cruise to make back over to the hub in order to see Holiday Wishes, which was awesome. Really enjoyed that version of Wishes. I think it's probably the best one I've seen. And
so this is the running debate we have, because now you have to get back to a Halloween party. So
yes, I know.
Holiday Wishes to Hallow Wishes, because I still maintain that Hallow Wishes is the best show.
And you may be right. I just can't.
Right.
I haven't seen
that one yet.
So I can't, I can't compare them. So we went over there and we saw that, and we decided that we would reward the kids for their good behavior by heading over to Fantasyland and hitting a few rides before catching the second parade. And we managed to ride Small World and Little Mermaid and Winnie the Pooh, which is a staple. The line for Seven Dwarfs Mine Train was actually still kind of long at that point, so we skipped it. We did get Peter Pan, though, with 10-minute wait, which is, I've never seen him in my lifetime. It's very rare. And apparently it would be like the next, maybe the following week, or by the next weekend, that they would open up that new area of the queue where you get to see the Darling's room and stuff.
So we
missed that by like a week or so. But it was funny because my wife was, had said something. We had just come off It's a Small World and the parade was about to start. And we looked and it was like no line for Peter Pan. She's like, we'll never make it if we do Peter Pan. I'm like, there's no line. We have to do it. So we got on and we made it back over to Main Street right by the hub, pretty much in the same spot we had saw, the castle lighting and holiday wishes, and got to see the parade. And I noticed a lot of the Frozen elements from the Frozen Summer Fun Parade, the processional.
Right.
A lot of those floats made it into the Once Upon a Christmas Time Parade, which is, they repurposed all those floats, including one that didn't have anybody on it. In the processional became Olaf's float.
Oh, nice.
In the Once Upon a Christmas Time parade, so we got his own float.
I'm glad that happened, because that was one of my disappointments about all the Frozen stuff that has been popping up all over the place, is that I really think that Olaf is kind of the key to why Frozen has been able to maintain its popularity. I mean, don't get me wrong, Anna and Elsa are great, and I know that every little girl under the age of 10 can't wait to see, talk to, sing to Anna and Elsa. But I think it's Olaf who gave the movie its broad appeal, and he just kind of got left out.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it might have been, in a processional, he was on, they had the digital version of Olaf, he was on the screen,
right,
and he was interacting that way, and so it was, maybe he got nixed from the float in favor of that. I remember thinking how odd it was, and I think I talked about this, like, when we did the trip report from our summer trip, when we did Frozen Summer Fun, that when that float came by during the processional, there was nothing on it.
Yeah,
I remember thinking there's that, like, it was as if it was meant to be someone's float, but then they never finished it.
Yeah,
that was the impression I got then, and then seeing it in the Once Upon a Christmas Time parade with Olaf on, I was like, now it's
now it makes sense.
Now it makes sense.
All right,
well, so that was good to see.
So wait, so let me ask you this then, because the other thing that I've heard repeated fairly frequently in the fan community about that Olaf on the float is that, gee, we were really glad to see that they, went to a live Olaf, but he was way out of proportion, and it, like, enough that it bothered people. Did you get that impression at all, or were you okay with it?
I was okay with it, and it may just be because I'm used to – I've seen the Times Square Olaf, who's about 7 feet tall.
Okay.
So that's out of proportion.
Yeah.
The Olaf on the float, I hadn't heard anybody else complain about that, and I don't remember anybody complaining there. I know my family didn't complain. Thinking back on it, I'm like, well, yeah, he's probably a little bigger than he probably should be in comparison to other characters, but I didn't have a problem with it then. And
good. All right. So let's wrap up the party. Anything that we haven't talked about that stood out to you about it, or that you would do differently if you were doing the party again?
We rounded it out. We tried after the second parade. We tried to head back to go see if the Seven Dwarves were the line was shorter, but they had already closed the line because it was getting close to the end of the party. That sure. Second parade was at 11 o'clock, and by the time we saw it at the top of Main Street, it was close to 11:30.
Sure.
So there's only by the time we made it back, there's only about 15 minutes left in the. Officially left in the party. So we went and we hit a few more rides. We never got back to see my must-do, which we never got even back in the area for, was seeing Jack Skellington as Sandy Claus.
Oh, yes.
So we never even got back there. I remember I would go on Kenny the Pirate's blog later after we returned home and find out that he went back, and it was like at the beginning, before the party started, it was like a 2-hour wait.
Right.
Yeah, so
it does. It builds in a hurry for those special characters.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've grown disappointed with the character greetings. Even like not just at the party, you know, I was sad to see it happen at the party as well. But sometimes they have a tendency to close the lines in anticipation of the characters, you know, time being up. You know, especially some popular characters. There was one instance at Epcot. It was Aurora in France, and we got there right as the time was stated on the times guide for her to start meeting, and there was already a line, and we jumped on the end of the line, and within a couple of minutes, you know, somebody tried to join the line behind us, and the cast member was like, "I'm sorry, the line's closed." Like, they had already counted off as many people as she could meet in that amount of time, and the people were upset, and then the cast member had said something like, "Well, you know, you gotta look at your times guide, and you gotta, you know, be here when it starts."
Right.
And I'm like, "Well, to be fair, the times guide says they meet from this time to this time, so you might think, hey, I've got all this time to get there."
Right.
It's not, you know, it's like they handle it differently for attractions. It's like, you know, when the park closes, if you're on the line for attraction, they don't kick you off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just different because with a character, they've got to pay cast members to continue to be in costume, and they can't do just one. They've got to do more than one so that they can rotate them.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they could come up with another way, I don't even know what the answer would be, but. Yeah. It's something that's, you know, as a family who is very heavily into character meet and greets with the younger children, it can be a point of frustration. But we learned very quickly, having the benefit of gone, you know, many times, that, you know, hey, you know, if you want to make sure, you got to get there when even before the window opens to make sure that you're there and you're waiting.
Right. Right. All right. So after your grand day of Epcot and the party, what was the plan for your, you know, day before a night race?
We were going to take it easy as much as we could. We had signed the kids up for the kids races. We had done that in January when we did our first run Disney weekend, and they enjoyed doing the kids races, and so much so that my daughter had signed up. She was eligible to do two races. She was able to, you know, do the 400 meter and the Mickey Mile.
Okay.
So she signed up to do both of those.
Cool.
And my son, who more and more as the night went on wasn't feeling well, you know, was at 3 years old, could do the 100 meter dash, and it turned out he would be up all night. At some point, he woke up in the night with this really, really bad barking cough. And,
oh, no.
You know, so, it kept us up. I was in the bathroom with him, running the shower to help his breathing and stuff. And eventually, he settled down. And, you know, we got worried that maybe it was something like, you know, like whooping cough that we were going to have to deal with for a few days, or croup.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And we were on our toes around that. And the next morning, he was just... I had to carry him everywhere the next morning. For his 100 meter dash, I had to carry him down to, we liked the fact that this, you know, it was Mickey Mouse in January, but for this, for these kids races, it was Duffy at the finish line. My kids love Duffy.
Okay. I guess good to know someone does.
Yes, my kids love. Yeah, and my daughter would. You know, she found out that there's a girl version over in Tokyo,
yes.
Shelley May, and she's like, oh, "That's what she wanted for Christmas." She's like, "I want a Shelley May doll." I'm like, "I can't get that."
It's too late. She needed to tell you earlier, and then, you know, Terry could have brought one back for you, or Jeff could have brought. We had like three guys in this past year who went to Tokyo. We never have that, and all of a sudden we did.
And she just, well, she made her way to Aulani not that long ago.
Right.
So now
she's
at Aulani, so there's an opportunity there. Aside from Jackson being under the weather and a little bit frustrating because, you know, having to deal, this is where being a parent is tough. It's like it's hard to juggle sometimes between, you know, like the needs of one child versus your desire to, you know, be present and, you know, and taking pictures and, you know, videotaping, you know, my daughter crossing the finish line for her race. It's just, if I stand up and try to, you know, make myself available for that and make him uncomfortable at the same time, it would just admittedly, I lost my cool a little bit, but I just gave up trying and sat down with him and let my wife kind of take care of everything else. So I got to, I kind of missed a little bit of that, but she had a great time, and that's what's important. And it was one of those times where the you know, you missed out on taking a few pictures, but you know, they have those photographers on the course that, you know, will take all the pictures and then charge a boatload of money for them afterwards. So it's always that option.
Yeah, at least they're there.
So so we had the kids' races, and then it was just, you know, we just wanted to relax. We didn't want to do anything too stressful. Like, there was a, we had toyed with the idea of maybe going to a park in the afternoon, but then decided to take some, take advantage of the fact that we were at a resort that we had never stayed at before. We went back to our resort, went to the big Nemo pool. The weather was starting to, turn. Yeah, my son wanted to go to the Cars pool because we're in the Cars suite and he loves cars and he wants to go to the Cozy Cone pool. And I'm like, no, we got to go to the big blue pool. I'm like, this is the only time we're going to get to go in it. I don't know. Like, we're, you know, as DVC members who had used up all our points, this was the only reason we were doing this trip on cash and staying someplace we probably won't stay again. So I was like, we have to go to the big blue pool. Don't you understand this? He's like, no, I want to go to the Cars pool. I'm like, well, at least he was feeling a little bit better. We got him in the water, and that woke him right up. It kind of rejuvenated him, and he started feeling better instantly. And you know, he as soon as he was in the water, he got over being upset at us for not letting him go in the Cars pool. And we did a little bit of swimming, and to our relief, our friend and savior, who was going to watch the kids that night, showed up. She arrived. Without any problems, met us at the hotel, came over to the pool, came back with us. We ordered the kids. This is something I don't understand. Like, my kids, we go in the pool and they fall asleep right afterwards.
Yeah.
So this is like one of those things I'll never understand, the people who say they're going to leave the park and go swimming and go refresh and get, like, you know, rejuvenated by going in the pool. It's like that. My kids were done.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I have similar experiences, especially when the kids were younger. Getting in the pool was the surest way to wear them out and have them take a really nice long nap.
Yeah, so we went back to the room after that, and they were done. So we ordered food for them, but when we left to go to the race, you know. My friend Meredith was watching the kids. They were both asleep. So we were like, oh, this is the easiest job you're going to have. So we just got, and the weather had, you know, was, we kept hearing the forecast was going to be rain that night. So as much as we were dreading it, the race was going to go, they would only call it if the weather got so bad and it was a lot of lightning.
Sure. Yeah, 'cause that's a heck of a lot of money to refund if they cancel it.
Yeah, so my wife was dreading this a little bit. She had never run more than a 5K.
Okay, so this is a big step up for her.
She was kind of in the same boat that I was in for the January half that I ran, where I had never run a half marathon before. My training had been cut short because of my knee injuries and knee issues leading up to it. So I was going into it just trying to finish. Knowing that I was going to be, you know, bringing up the back of the pack. As much as my training had been better this time around, my legs were doing better, I wasn't going to leave her, and we were doing it together. We were starting in the back, and our goal was just to have as good a time as possible and finish out the race and make it to the party afterwards, which is included in the wine and dine registration. They have the after party at Epcot for a few hours, and you know, starting in the back and knowing that we were going to be running, you know, at a slow pace meant that we were going to miss most of the party, but we were hoping to get a little bit in. And we were going to try not to let the rain get the best of us or get us down too much.
Okay, so talk a little bit about the challenge of running when it's that wet, especially at night, because had you run a night race at Disney World before?
No, I've never run a lot of my training runs are at night, so I'm used to running around my neighborhood at night. My wife, not so much. She normally runs during the day. So interesting. Like, you know, like we got excited when we got there. The amount of people there, all the different costumes. We actually were dressed up as chefs. I had bought these actual like real chef jackets and chef hats, and we were wearing them. And we were supposed to be Linguini and Colette from from Ratatouille. And one of the funny moments was when like we were getting all dressed. My wife hands me, you know, gets this idea. She's like, "Oh," she grabs a Sharpie and she hands it to me. She goes, "You can put your name on your jacket." And I'm like, "Oh, great!" So I take the Sharpie and I go to write my name, and I just automatically wrote James. And she's like,
"Did she actually hit you or just give you a dirty look?"
She just gave me a dirty look. She's like, "You idiot. You just ruined it." She's like, "You were supposed to write Linguini and I was going to write Colette." And I'm like, "You said write your name." It's just like, it's just one of those muscle memory things. If somebody says write your name and hands you a pen, it's like, you're just going to write your name no matter what else you want to write. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But no, but then we got a lot of, you know, we had joined a Facebook group for the Wine and Dine half marathon, and we got like, you know, we posted our picture on there, like, you know, as we were headed out to the race, and, and there was people who were like on the same bus as us. We're like, "Oh yeah, we saw you," like, you know, "You're on a bus, you're like up ahead of us," or something like that. And people who actually thought we were real chefs, because I guess we looked like real chefs. And so that was fun, and it lasted right up until we got into our corrals. And, you know, when you're sitting there waiting for the start, and that's when, like, if you're nervous, you have nothing else to do but think about what's to come. So I can remember my wife was getting nervous, and then it started to rain.
Of course.
And it never stopped.
Yeah.
For the
so talk about that. You know, I know I've heard people say before that, you know, it was cool to do a night race at Walt Disney World once, and they're glad they did it once, but once is enough, because the whole concept of a night race, as cool as it seems, it just, with that many people and the varying terrain and all of that, it just felt like a disaster waiting to happen. Was it something that bothered you, you know, that much, or did you find it not such a big deal?
The rain was bothersome. There's a lot of places where the ground was a little slick,
right?
And so, you know, people were going very slowly. I was very hesitant to make any sudden changes in direction. I was trying to run as straight as possible. If it meant, like, if I was stuck behind somebody who was walking ahead of me when it was we were doing a run and walk interval. Mm-hmm. Strategy, and if there was a lot of times where our run interval was up against somebody's walk in front of us, and we were just like, you know what, let's just walk, because you know, we're not gonna take a chance. It was very, you know, in the back of the pack is very crowded. We heard plenty of things from people who ran up in the front about how much room they had to maneuver, but there were a lot of places where it was not only slick, but there was a lot of choke points compared to the other half marathon I ran in January.
Right.
This course was different. You know, that course we ran, you know, from Epcot to the Magic Kingdom and then back to Epcot. This one took you from the Wide World of Sports to through the Animal Kingdom, then over to Hollywood Studios, through Hollywood Studios, down through the Boardwalk area,
right,
and into Epcot through, like, by the International Gateway, and, you know, through part of Epcot before finishing.
See, and I always find the Boardwalk itself rather slick.
So that was, yeah, that was incredibly slick there then. But they were Disney was very good about warning everybody. They made sure that everybody had lots of cast members out there warning everybody to be very careful as we approached and while we were on it. And the majority of people at this point chose to take it easy and walk and not risk any injury. But even before that, there were a lot of choke points, a lot of, like, places where you were funneled into an area where you were running only three or four people wide, shoulder to shoulder. And I found that to be, with so many people, that was kind of dangerous. And then you add in the fact that it's at night and it's not as easy to see your footing.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things, as cool as it was to run through the Animal Kingdom, the Animal Kingdom pathways are not as trustworthy. They're not as trustworthy, you know, like you really got to, you know, be mindful of where you're, you know, placing your feet, because it's not as smooth and it's very uneven and you're going uphill and downhill. And so it was cool, like, to run into the Animal Kingdom and see the Tree of Life. It was lit up. A little bit was taken away from that, like, working in the Rivers of Light. They had the walls up around the entirety of around the river. So once you came down the hill into the Animal Kingdom and started making your way around, most of what you saw, if you looked to your right, was just, you know, the construction walls they had up. So that was a little, you didn't get to see as much in the Animal Kingdom as you might have thought you would have.
Right, and that you would normally, just because of the construction.
So, you know, like, and so you add to that the little risk factor of running at night, and it probably would have been a better experience during the day, but it was still kind of cool. The one place where it really was awesome to run through at night was Hollywood Studios, because you got, there was one point backstage where you're running through the by the wardrobe area, part of the old backlot tour, and they turned that into a disco tunnel, and they've got mirror balls, and they got disco music and lights and stuff playing, and, you know, and I guess if you're susceptible to those kind of things where it can give you, like, you know, flashing lights can give you a headache, or God forbid something worse. I mean, that I could see that being an issue for some people, but we really enjoyed that part, the tunnel. And then you get the Osborne family spectacle of dancing lights that you get to run right through, and which is just, you know, that was like the best part of the whole experience, was getting to run through that all lit up at night. And I wish we had had more time to stop and enjoy that part, but you know, starting in the back of the pack as we had the balloon ladies, the dreaded balloon
ladies.
Yeah, you
got the sweepers coming.
They had passed us because we stopped. I stopped to go to the bathroom somewhere right after we entered Disney's Hollywood Studios. They came and they passed us, and as I came out, my wife was like, "Oh no, they passed us!" And I remember thinking to myself, and I was actually telling her this and telling other people that we were running with, I was like, "No, we passed the sweep point at mile 8 when we were coming off the main road and going into Hollywood Studios." I was like, I was pretty confident there wasn't going to be another sweep point. And so we caught up to them and got back in front for briefly, just out of pride. We were like, "Hey, we're not going to finish behind the people who are supposed to be finishing last." So, you know, so we ran a bit to catch up to them. And then as we came out of Hollywood Studios and started, you know, heading towards the pathway to take us to the boardwalk, there were a lot of buses lined up in the parking lot. And it turned out that there was indeed a second sweep point set up there, which and there were the cast members on the radios, you know, radio, you know, saying, "Hey," like, you know, they were waiting on the balloon ladies who were, and the balloon ladies who bring up the rear, supposed to maintain that, you know, that 16 minute a mile pace,
right,
were behind pace. There was a point, like, around that time where they actually were, you know, doing their power walk and then looked at each other and went, "Oh, no, we're behind pace." And all of a sudden started running and threw everybody into a panic.
Yeah.
Because people thought, they were like, "Hey, we're with the balloon ladies. We're good." You know, like, now had to run.
But now they're being chased.
So it was just, you know, like, but that was just a, you know, one of the, just nobody could run their pace, you know, in that kind of weather and in those conditions. So it, you know, that as much as I like the idea of having those balloon ladies, it just, it's very stressful when you're around them.
Yeah.
I saw that in January, and I saw it again in November. And, like, you know, people, you know, see them coming, and they start to run when maybe they shouldn't be running. You know, that there's a reason that you're doing the pace you're doing, whether, you know, it's just, like, you know, like the conditioning you have, or maybe, you know, you're dealing with cramps or an injury or something, and
sure,
you're back in the pack, and you see them coming, and, like, they. All of a sudden, you got all these people packed into a cramped space, deciding that they need to run when, you know, they shouldn't have to, or they
right,
shouldn't be. You know, like, for safety reasons, it probably shouldn't be. So there was a lot of that going on, and that was very frustrating, especially because it almost took out my wife as we were you know, as they were coming and we were trying to pass those buses, everybody saw the buses and heard the balloon ladies, you know, coming and started running again. And it was like, you know, you're coming out of Hollywood Studios and you're going towards that path. And there's a lot of benches and trees and things and obstacles. And it's one of those choke points where it's literally a sidewalk. So it's only like 5 or 6 feet across.
Right, right.
And so there's not much room and everybody's kind of funneling into it. And somebody's like stepped on my wife's leg and she almost fell and, you know, almost gave up right there. But, you know, we pushed through that, got past the buses and then slowed down and made it to the boardwalk. And that was, you know, once you were past that point, that's when you're in the clear. And so you're able to slow down a bit and we made it, you know. We got to the end. I'm so proud of my wife for doing that, you know, considering she had never run more than a 5K before that, and her training was limited. And we knew not to expect greatness or, you know, any kind of record-breaking times. So, but, you know, we finished that race when a lot of people didn't. A lot of, you know, we find out later that there was a lot of, like, experienced, you know, runners and experienced Run Disney, run walkers that, due to the conditions and other things, just that didn't make it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. So you guys toughed it out in difficult conditions. You made it through. So here's my question. Would you do it again? Or it was once enough for the wine and dine?
At the time, we said we weren't going to do it again. At night. We were like, yeah, we both felt like it wasn't worth it.
Okay.
And a lot of that had to do with the weather and the conditions, and the fact that we also just, you know, both at the level we're at when it comes to running, the kind of time we could put in on a half marathon, it left us no time for the party.
Right.
We didn't get to do any of the party because of the weather. We did enter Epcot. We went through the whole process. We went through security and we got into Future World. And the first place we stopped off was the Starbucks, just to get a break from the rain and warm up a bit. And we sat there for a little while. And then we decided that we weren't going to go any further than that. Okay. We went back to the bus after that. It was, you know, our plan going in was, you know, maybe to make that dessert cart that we missed the day before and just, hey, let's just get in there. Let's say we went at the party, redeem a, you know, a drink ticket that they give you and maybe get one thing as a reward for, you know, for what we just did. But it didn't work out. We were just too tired, too beat up, too cold and wet. So we left and, you know, I'm not going to lie, at that night we left with a bad taste in our mouths about the experience. And we just said, you know, like the people up, you know, if you're an experienced runner and you can run in one of the earlier corrals and you can have room to run safely and actually take your time in certain spots, maybe stop for characters. That was another thing, another issue with all that rain, and none of the characters were out. We saw a few characters here and there, but there was a lot of character points where they had, you know, everything was set up for a character to be there, and there was just nobody there because, you know, they just couldn't have them out in the rain.
Right.
So it was a lot of character stops that were missing. And, so we weren't thinking that, but, it'll only be a few days later that my wife would look at me and say, well, maybe I'll do it again. Maybe it'll be better. Maybe we'll get lucky and it won't rain.
Well, like, you know, it's true. I mean, it's rainier in November in Walt Disney World than it is in, you know, January usually. But it's a gamble either way. Running outdoors is running outdoors.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're going to run, you can't let a little rain stop you, and it actually became a badge of honor.
Sure,
you know, especially on social media and in a Facebook group that we were in with all the other people who had run along with us, you know, like, you know, who started referring to the race as instead of the wine and dine as, you know, the splish and splash or the splash and dash, you know, different
the wait and dine,
the different names that they came up, you know, four with, and you know, it was an accomplishment that we're both very proud of, and my wife is, you know, planning on, you know, trying another half marathon maybe in 2016.
All right.
So I'm behind her on doing that. I think, you know, she's proven that she could do it. Now she, you know, wants to do another one. So I think we still enjoy the Run Disney races, and we're still thinking about doing them. And we're keeping our options open as far as the wine and dine again at another time,
sure.
Maybe when we're a little bit more experienced and can get corral placement, you know, so we're not bringing up the rear.
That does make it harder, especially when you're in a course where the course narrows as often as it does, and you have those more difficult passages.
Yeah, and I think that was probably one of the most frustrating aspects of the run, was just when, at the times where we were ready to run and say, "Hey, we're gonna run. This is our portion of run. It's our interval to make up some ground and better our time here." It's like there was nowhere to go.
Yeah. All right, so kind of, you know, pulling this all together, the other big question I have is, you know, you packed an awfully lot into a short trip here. Really busy with a run in the middle of it. Would you approach another race weekend the same way, or you know, you looking to, you know, do another race weekend in a more laid back approach?
I think our next race weekend it definitely would have to be take a more laid back approach. That was just, it was a little too much, a little too hectic trying to squeeze everything that we tried to do into this one weekend. Left us very worn out. I think that attributed to my son not feeling so hot. We were just, you know, we were running the kids down with us. You know, we hate to leave them behind, especially since the Run Disney, like, I love the kids' races.
Right, and they seem to enjoy them.
And they enjoy them, so, I'm not going to leave them out just on the basis of how, like, you know, I'm saying that it would make it easier for us to go and run if we didn't have them with us.
Sure.
I would never, you know, leave my kids behind when I'm going to Disney just for that reason alone. So I think we would just take a more laid-back approach. I think depending on what race it is, and I think it was a special circumstance. You know, when we originally planned it to do it, we were planning just to go and run and work in a little bit of relaxation around it. But it just so happened that it coincided with the party and the last weekend of the food and wine, which we had never done. So.
Right. And you couldn't pass up those opportunities.
Yeah, we felt, you know, compelled, like obligated to try and squeeze that all in.
All right. Well, you know, James, thanks again so much for coming on the show and you know, sharing perspective on another different kind of trip that I know a lot of our listeners consider. You know, there's been a lot of chatter about Run Disney, and, you know, even though this one maybe didn't work out exactly as you had planned it, you know, I think what's refreshing is that you come out of it looking back at it now and realize that even though this particular race was a little rough, you know, it was still overall worthwhile. You're glad you did it, and you know, you're still considering a similar experience again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's hard to distance yourselves sometimes from the experiences when you have them, but I think, you know, reflecting, you know, you can, there's a lot of enjoyment that we got out of this trip that, you know, that we didn't realize at the time due, you know, to letting some of the disappointments kind of, like, you know, linger in our minds.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing about the next one, and, you know, hopefully the next one, the positives will float to the top a little faster.
And I hope so, too.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.